Welcome back to another ILTA article podcast for the summer part two issue of ILTA's Peer to Peer, our quarterly magazine. This article podcast will talk from the article in part one called New Generation of Security Challenges and Changes Emerging as Law Firms Adapt to Work from Home Environment. It was on page 28 and it was written by Greg Russo. Today, however, I am joined by Mike Paul, Chief Technology Officer and Information Security Manager at Innovative Computing Systems. As always, I'm Beth Ann Stubing. I'm the Director of Publications and Press for ILTA, and I'm thrilled to have you here. Mike, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot that's been going on, specifically with the pandemic, to law firms having to adapt from kind of work from home environments. What's kind of the biggest thing you've seen through all of this, these changes, specifically as we talk a little bit more about the law firm security side?
The thing that we've experienced through the last few months and through COVID, it's been a small group of remote access users have been out there, usually the attorneys and the billers in the firm. And as you know, the COVID has struck us and hit firms and hit companies, and we've had to see offices get closed possibly, that has branched out. You see more and more of the support staff working remotely when they never really did in the past. So as you have to broaden out your entire firm and who is now getting remote support, well, that brings a lot of challenges for IT, from software and licensing to hardware and different things to make that all work. But it also brings up a lot of security issues. Frequently, home networks and home environments are not as well protected and not as secure as a corporate environment, because you have someone watching the corporate environment and making sure firmware and patches and other things are applied. And when you go home, that same thing doesn't necessarily happen. So IT is faced with this challenge of how do I secure our data and keep things protected while we broaden out and allow this remote access. And the trend we're seeing now, and we're facing it with our own internal staffing, is when people are coming back, they want to stay working remotely. So how do you allow that exception? How do you track that? How do you keep everybody secure?
And I think that's something people aren't thinking about, and that, workers need, or want, I should say, to remain at home. They say they can do their jobs at home, but we aren't really looking at the flip side of it, the security side. And that runs us perfectly kind of into the news lately. There's been a lot of talk about ransom attacks hitting major US companies. Law firms are opening back up their offices. They're providing these hybrid working options. What are some of the security vulnerabilities that they're going to face that we're going to need to talk about a little bit more openly as we look toward a hybrid work environment?
Yeah, it's very interesting times right now. We've seen a lot of zero-day exploits. These are exploits where there is no patch for it. And, the ransomware and the hackers are really sophisticated, and they find these things pretty quickly, no matter how fast the vendors may patch. So you have to layer in security as a kind of like an onion, layer it in different layers to protect the environment and protect the systems. And some of it starts with security policies and talking to your firm and training and security awareness training. And others, it relates to technology and having the right products in place that can help be proactive in shutting down a potential attack. There's a lot of vendors out there that offer that. And even when you deploy such a solution, you still want to have different layers of defense to be able to protect systems. But I think a key part on this is talking to your users, because they are the guardians. A lot of users think that, you have IT and they'll always be able to protect. But when you're hovering over that email and you're thinking, well, should I click on this? Has there been training to identify that it's a bad email? Because at that point in time, that's the user making that decision. And we need better education. We need, consistent, IT and InfoSec in general just need a better approach to talking to your end users, keeping them in the loop, doing testing, safe testing that you can, phishing campaigns that you give the user a chance to, look at the email and that stuff starts sticking. I think it's really important that that's included in any, InfoSec discussion is helping the user understand what they're looking at and what they're clicking on.
Definitely true. What are some of these top technical solutions that we should be looking at as we talk a little bit more about the hybrid work security and the vulnerabilities therein.
Since there's a lot of cloud and cloud options out there and a lot of services that are out in the cloud in different places, and it's growing, being able to not have to run a Microsoft Exchange server for your email on premise, you know, it's expensive. And when you can, you know, leverage security that's out there and push that stuff out, you know, it really helps operationally. However, you have additional, you know, security concerns, because now that service is available out there to everyone. And so one of the key things on this is being able to identify your users as they're coming in. And, you know, how do you do that? One really important way is multi-factor authentication. Just having your Windows user ID and password, it's not enough to protect the system. I mean, you know, I'd like to see IT and computers, and we kind of evolve away from passwords, but they're here to stay for a while. And so we need to add another layer to protect your logins and protect your data. So I think a key part on that is multi-factor authentication, having it implemented wherever your data is at throughout your infrastructure and wherever your IT systems are stored. And another good thing, once you get MFA applied, is endpoint protection. It's super important that you have a really good vendor that you understand and work with to implement, you know, protecting your systems. And that even goes for people working at home or a BYOD scenario. Frequently, these vendors will, you know, if you buy a package, they'll let you deploy that endpoint protection on home machines for free or a lower cost. And there's no reason that you shouldn't, as, you know, IT, you know, mandate that anybody connecting to your systems, even if it's, you know, via Citrix or some virtual desktop or something, that the system connecting is protected through endpoint protection. And these technologies have evolved over time. There's some really good stuff out there that can really help and mitigate. And then a last piece, and this is super challenging, but this is something that, you know, I deal with a lot, is making sure your machines are patched. With everyone remote, it's a little harder to patch an endpoint workstation at someone's house, but it's just as important to get that patch and get that on a cycle and set the expectation with your firm. Hey, we're doing patch cycle on X day a month. We always do it. If you have any questions, you know, the system's going to be available and available, whatever you want to communicate to the firm. But once you start setting that cadence, users start learning that, and then you get your systems patched up. And finally, the last kind of piece of technology that I would suggest or advise, or, you know, that we're really fond of, is vulnerability management software. So this is software that will detect what patches have been applied, what might be missing, because it's super easy to say, yeah, I've got all my Windows patches applied, but frequently Microsoft will state, hey, you got to apply a register key for it to apply correctly. And we're all busy IT folks. We don't always necessarily read all the release notes in those patches, and you might miss it. So you have that vulnerability scanner in your vulnerability management program to let you know, hey, that registry key wasn't applied correctly, that patch wasn't applied correctly, let me work on that. And you have visibility into it. Very useful to do. You can add it on in different ways, but it's something that I think everyone from the IT management perspective really needs to focus in on and understand, as especially as these hackers come in and exploit zero-day vulnerabilities and you know, any vulnerability. I mean, a lot of this recent Kaseya attack that we had, they had their software, you know, the patch was available since 2015, and it just didn't get applied to different systems. So, you know, if you had a vulnerability management system, you would see that in the reports, and you could, you know, focus in on that and get those mitigated and get the patch applied correctly.
There's a lot that's going on. It's always hard to kind of keep that last bit up to date. But specifically, what could law firms do to anticipate and then protect themselves against this changing security vulnerabilities, specifically as we head into the new year?
I think one of the things that frequently, and this really comes to the maturity model of the firm and the IT department, of how far along they are on policies and standards within the firm. I think if you aren't thinking about implementing these, you know, these security policies, and specifically I'm talking security type policies, I'm not just talking about how to do, you know, something, but it's a standard that everybody within the firm kind of adheres to and you aspire to solve. solved. And if you aren't talking through that with your tech committees or, you know, your managing partners or whoever, you know, and get everybody's buy-in, those security policies, you know, won't get implemented, won't get discussed, and you keep reacting to the next threat and to the next threat. These policies are, you know, if you've got a well architected security policy and you know, some really strong personalities in the firm to, you know, get it implemented, those policies will allow you to be more proactive, will allow you to get the security training I mentioned earlier, will allow you to set standards for when you bring on new systems, so that when you bring on a new system, it's hardened in the right way, will allow you to respond to audit requests by your own clients. I frequently see audit requests and there's a whole mess of security related questions that aren't dealt with unless you have some security policies in place. And if you don't have a standard, then, you know, the audit question becomes a standard. And again, you're reacting to it and you're behind. So one thing I urge everybody to kind of consider is, as you mature your operations and your IT, and you know, every business goes through this, and you have a better understanding of how to implement these security policies, you know, getting some security policies set up, talking to the right people to help you. There's a lot of third-party consultants who just focus in on security and can help you, you know, navigate that, especially with the CCPA and other things. That will function as your baseline. And so as long as you have that baseline, then you can do the other things to help with protecting your end users, protecting your data, because you've got that standard of everybody shall have endpoint protection. Everybody shall have, you know, phishing tests. So you're already aware of things. Everybody's, you know, your accounting department has gone through training, so they aren't accidentally, you know, fished into sending $20,000 to, you know, some foreign entity that tricked them. All of that's really covered in a comprehensive security policy and really provides a proactive approach to, you know, managing your data and managing, you know, how you respond to things.
I think moving for all of us from one kind of situation to another, either at work or anything else, is going to be keeping everything safe and adapting to whatever changes come on board.
Absolutely. When I first started my career, you know, it was always the request, hey, open this port on the firewall and, you know, get it open and you look like an IT hero. But, you know, now when you look at that request and you look at something like that, you have to look at it from a, you know, security mind, security perspective, where if I open up this port, I know I'll make the client happy that we've opened up and allowed this service, but what's the risk? Did you have a risk-based discussion with the firm and with the stakeholders that if we open up this service, you know, what could befall the company? And as long as everyone's had that discussion and you've had that risk-based discussion, you know, that's fine. You can move forward. You've got it covered. You've got, you know, what I would call a risk memo, but you've had that discussion. But it's definitely eye-opening when you start thinking about IT from that security perspective.
It is. You're right. It is eye-opening and it's a little scary, but we all should walk into this knowing that we can do our part to help with security challenges and changes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It starts with the end user. It starts with a security focus in mind. It starts documentation. I mean, everybody hates that, but writing that down, you know, understanding how stuff is flowing. I mean, documentation can be your savior. And it's not the sexy thing, but it really makes a difference. And
I imagine that there are IT professionals at ILTA within our organization who have to deal with me. And then certainly IT professionals within ILTA in general saying, yes, documentation. Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, I know documentation is hard to keep current, but when you have your baseline and a security incident happens and you've written down like what it's supposed to happen, then you're like, oh, it's not supposed to happen that way. You can just troubleshoot the whole situation and you can possibly mitigate a incident much faster. I mean, it really doesn't take very much to get a hacker into the network. And if you haven't put in, you know, layers of security, and if you haven't spent the time to do that, they can take down your network, encrypt things. It's super easy to do and doesn't take a lot of effort. So that's why you have to layer this stuff in. You have to you know, educate users. You have to make sure they're not admins on their system. I mean, you have to set up segmentation of the network and only allow certain traffic, change your passwords, rotate your passwords on a regular basis. All that stuff is kind of basic IT. That's key. It only takes one click to get somebody into your system. And, you know, that's that advanced persistent threat. It's hard to find it if you're not doing all of these other security items. And then once they figure out your network, they'll strike on a 3-day weekend, like over July 4th. That was a 3-day weekend. I mean, you know, Friday evening, nobody wants to come in back in on IT and start resolving a security incident that happened, you know, a little earlier in the day. It's a 3-day weekend. You know, you want to get the time off, but that's when they strike. That's when the hackers hit. 3-day weekends are bad for IT because people know this and they use that time to take advantage of people being out and taking down the network.
There's a lot for our listeners to unpack here. I thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to you guys again as we look forward to more work from home articles, specifically engaging in security concerns as we continue to navigate this all together.